Good evening, I'm Kevin Baird with the KUAC News Minor Update. Alaska moved up to the state's second of five wildfire preparedness levels Wednesday, as wet fuels from late spring snowmelt continued to dry out and lightning storms blanketed the state, according to the Alaska Interagency Coordination Center. Fire crews worked quickly to stop new fire starts in the interior this week, most of them caused by the lightning strikes. On Tuesday, there were 7,500 lightning strikes around Alaska, the heaviest day for lightning so far this summer. Conditions favorable to lightning storms are scheduled to continue for the rest of the week. The State Division of Forestry on Wednesday issued a burn suspension, which means the use of burn barrels and burning in open debris piles is prohibited until conditions improve. Campfires and barbecues are allowed, but people should be careful because of the conditions. The 57 active wildfires around the state as of Wednesday included a few small fires that were stopped close to Fairbanks and some bigger blazes being mopped up elsewhere. Among those fires was the Livingston Fire. 84 firefighters were still working this 116-acre fire in the Rosie Creek area between the Tanana River and the Parks Highway as of Wednesday morning. Fire crews had constructed a fire line around 80% of the fire. At the Sheep Creek Fire, a Division of Forestry fire engine in the Goldstream Valley spotted a human-caused fire on Esther Dome on Tuesday and was able to knock it down and keep it to 0.2 acres. Harding Lake Fire, lightning ignited this small fire on the backside of Harding Lake on Tuesday. A helicopter and a fire engine knocked the fire down. In western Alaska, crews were also in mop-up mode after the Tusikpak Lake Fire, which is burning on 7,985 acres of tundra east of Point Hope. That fire is the largest Alaska fire so far this season. Safety standards were recently introduced for ships transiting marine waters of northwest Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell reports.
Unlike other international waterways, the Bering Strait doesn't have safety measures in place. There are no designated shipping lanes or shallow areas to be avoided. That's in part because, on average, the Strait sees the same amount of traffic in one season that the English Channel sees in a day. Still, that hasn't stopped environmental organizations from lobbying for regulations in the region for years.
One accident in this region could lead to catastrophic results.
Elena Argakova is an Arctic shipping advisor for the World Wildlife Fund.
The amount of wildlife, the diversity of wildlife, the fact that there are local communities that subsist on the marine mammals, and the fact that some of them are starting to be oil and gas tankers that Russia is sending to Asian markets.
Plus the lack of emergency response infrastructure. Those things together make the region ripe for disaster. Agarkova says at first Russia wouldn't agree on regulations for the Bering Strait, claiming the U.S. was trying to control vessel traffic. But now Russia is trying to capitalize on the shorter route to Asia, so Agarkova says they saw the value in making the seaway safer.
The fact that U.S. and Russia have managed to come to an agreement on these measures, despite broader political discord, is really heartening.
That agreement is detailed out on a map of the Bering Strait. The map shows north and southbound lanes laid out on either side of the Diomede Islands. It also highlights St. Lawrence, Nunavak, and King Island as areas to be avoided. The International Maritime Organization regulates shipping worldwide and approved these standards. But like a lot of international law, they're voluntary. Tug Captain Sharm Sederquist says, actually, that doesn't matter that much.
It's like a car. If you have a bunch of DUIs, no one wants to insure you. If you're a shipping company that has a bunch of problems, no one wants to insure you. And that's why they have these standards, and that's why people are held to those standards.
Those standards go into effect in the Bering Strait on December 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
Three seats on the Borough Assembly and two on the Board of Education are wide open this year. So is the Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor's race. All of the incumbents whose terms are expiring in October are either stepping down or termed out. The official filing period opens July 16th, but four people have filed paperwork with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, signaling an intent to run for local office. North Pole Mayor Bryce Ward is planning to run for borough mayor, as is with Robert Shields, a baker and founder of the Alliance for Reason and Knowledge. Running for borough assembly are Sam Tuck, a retired law enforcement officer and hotel maintenance manager, and Leah Berman-Williams, a mathematics professor at University of Alaska Fairbanks. On the school board, President Heidi Haas announced Tuesday that she will be stepping down when her second term ends later this year. Mother of three children said she wants to spend more time with family. School board member Thomas Bartel said in a text message on Wednesday that he will also be stepping down when his term ends in October. On the Borough Assembly, Catherine Dodge, Lance Roberts, and Van Lawrence are all finishing their second terms. Borough Code limits Assembly members to two consecutive terms. A person can seek to return to the Assembly after 1 year has passed. Borough Clerk April Trickey said the clerk's office will be hosting a local candidate open house on July 7th starting at 10 a.m. Prospective candidates can pick up paperwork and ask questions about running for local office. For more on tonight's stories and others, go to newsminer.com or KUAC.org. I'm Kevin Baird.